we first met around the time you published that paper, and one of the things that galvanised me, and I suddenly understood the risk here, was you pointed out to me that these plastics are made of hydrocarbons, and just as birds of a feather flock together, oily chemicals stick together. And you made the point, look, these plastics are out there, they are encountering other potentially toxic chemicals at low concentration, and they may be well concentrating them into and onto the plastic. And then when they go into microorganisms or bigger organisms, they could dump that toxic cargo. And that's when I think I had my wake-up moment for this.
Yes, and that was a wake-up moment actually for policy. The first policy-related meeting about microplastics was held in the US, actually. And there weren't only a handful of scientists there. There was myself and one of my early postdocs, Emma Tewton, and there was a colleague that's become kind of a lifelong friend called Shigi Takada from Japan, and he'd previously shown in his research this potential for plastics in seawater to absorb and concentrate contaminants. So contaminants, man-made chemicals, if you like, persistent organic pollutants, a range of other chemicals present in seawater would become super concentrated on the surface of plastics because those chemicals were hydrophobic in nature. And it's a little bit like if you've ever washed up in a plastic washing up bowl, perhaps a spaghetti bolognese or a curry, and it's had food dye in it. Often that dye latches onto the plastic because it has a greater affinity for the plastic than the seawater. And that was what Shigi Takada demonstrated was happening with some of these hydrophobic contaminants. And so the question struck me, well, what happens if those plastics move to a different chemical environment, perhaps the guts of an organism, where if it's a warm-blooded creature, you might have a different temperature, you'd certainly have different chemical conditions, you might have enzymes acting. Would some of those chemicals be released? And indeed, that is what we showed, that if you let plastic acquire a burden of chemicals from the natural environment at concentrations equivalent to what you'd find those chemicals in the environment, and you then moved the plastic to either clean water or clean chemical constituents resembling the contents of the guts of an invertebrate or a warm-blooded creature, what you saw is the chemicals being released. But the interesting thing was that the rate of release could be up to 30 times greater into a warm-blooded creature than the rate of release back into clean seawater.
So two questions then. One, if we go and sample seawater, do we see this mechanism happening for real? So having demonstrated it's theoretically possible, have we got evidence that this sort of concentration chemically is occurring? And two, have we got evidence that with that having occurred, if it does, it really does impart into the bodies of marine organisms, therefore dumping the toxic cargo in and concentrating it into them?
So there's really clear evidence that the phenomena was occurring in the natural environment. The question was then, we've got this concentration mechanism, we've got the increased release. How much worse does the plastic make it? Because, of course, here, if you're dealing with chemicals that are already in the environment, marine life is already exposed to them. So the critical step was to understand how much worse does the plastic make it. And what we showed, interestingly, was, yes, the plastics had a role, but compared to the intake by diet, and if you're passing water, seawater over your gills, direct from the water, that the role of the plastic was quite trivial at that time in terms of the transfer of chemicals to the creature. So it was part of the picture, but it didn't seem that the plastic was making things all that substantially worse. But what I would say to that as a caveat now, because of course our understanding of plastic pollution and these small particles has increased a lot, that we were working at the time on, if you like, a standard gut transit time. So the amount of time the plastic was in the body and the amount of time it would have to release those chemicals. And of course, what we now know is that the really small particles, down a few microns and certainly into the nanoscale, have the potential to pass from the digestive tract into the circulatory system and to pass around the body very rapidly. We've shown in marine mollusks within 6 hours of exposure in a fish tank that the nanoparticles of plastic have gone literally everywhere in the tissues. And then if you move those mollusks to clean conditions, even after 28 days, you can still detect the presence of the nanoplastics in them. In terms of harm, I would see that there's there's three different routes. And there's the physical presence of the plastic causing some sort of disruption. You can picture that easier with a big bit of plastic causing an obstruction in the digestive tract. And there's evidence of that longer term accumulation in mollusks in the hepatopancreas, which is analogous, if you like, to the liver. There's also the potential for chemical toxicity, where you've got chemicals that are already in the environment, anthropogenic chemicals accumulating on the surface of the plastic, becoming super concentrated and then released to a creature upon ingestion. But on top of that, there's also the potential for chemical additives that were incorporated into the plastic at the time of manufacture. Now, these are chemicals that are put there mostly, but not all, put there with good reason. But some of them are known to be harmful in the wrong context. And for that reason, we have certain chemicals such as phthalate plasticizers that are prohibited for use in children's toys and in applications in hospitals because of the known adverse effects of those chemicals. But if we've got plastics that have got these additives in them that have become very small pieces, in the wrong context, there's also the potential for those chemical additives to be released. And interestingly, what the work where we were looking at the chemicals accumulating from the environment soon realized was that the concentrations of some of these additive chemicals in the plastic could be far, far greater than you'd ever achieve by this mechanism of the chemicals absorbing to the surface of the plastic. But the key question there is about, well, what's the exposure pathway? So what are there instances where we've got plastics that contain potentially really hazardous substances that are finding their way into the environment already as small particles rather than perhaps having to take years to fragment? And the interesting one that's come onto the horizon there most recently is particles from tire wear every time you drive along the road. And of course, tires aren't food contact material. They're not part of children's toys. There's a wide range of chemicals that are potentially very hazardous incorporated into tires. Again, many of them put there with good reason. But potentially hazardous. And on what's happening as you drive along the road and put the brakes on, of course, you're getting that particulate dust arising from the tyres immediately. And that's washed from roads when it rains. It's carried into watercourses. And we've proved that those tyre wear particles can pass through wastewater treatment and into the marine environment. They can also be washed directly into streams and rivers. And some of them, of course, become dust into the air that will then settle back into the environment.